Hello and welcome to this edition of Ox Talk, your Oxfordshire speaking news service, this Tuesday, the 20th of February, 2024. Sunrise is at 7:15 a.m. and sunset is at 5:26 p.m. The weather this week is mostly wet, with highs of 13 and lows of 2 degrees. This week's readers are Janet Proudman and Leslie Court. I'm your technical officer, James Cull.
A new cat cafe has opened in Oxford, but it's still waiting to welcome its first feline friend on site. Mac Kitten Coffee Shop opened in Cowley Road near the Plain Roundabout on 9th of February, with customers excited to enjoy a cup of coffee with a purring kitten on their lap. But it's far from perfect for animal lovers, as the cafe is unable to house cats yet within the store. It is understood permits are still being arranged for this. The cafe has said it cannot confirm a date for when it will be able to bring cats on site. A spokesperson said, "For now, we are a normal cafe. We cannot estimate how long the procedures will take yet. Once the procedures are completed, we will bring the cats." The Liberal Democrat candidate for the Cowley ward, Scott Urban, said, "A warm welcome to Mac Kitten Coffee Shop on Cowley Road. Do pop along and say hi." One review left on Google also reveals customers would be able to bring their cats into the cafe. It said, "The service was excellent, with friendly staff who were attentive to customers' needs. The shop itself was impeccably clean, creating a welcoming environment to enjoy a cup of coffee or a bite to eat. What sets coffee shop Mac Kitten apart is its unique cat atmosphere. The idea of cat cafes has gained in popularity in the UK following a craze which began in Taiwan."
A radio gardening show is coming to Oxford to record an episode at a university college. On April the 23rd, BBC Radio 4's Gardeners Question Time will record a programme at Trinity College. The panel of gardening experts will address queries from local enthusiasts. Gardeners Question Time attracts 2 million listeners a week and is recorded in a new location every week. Since the show began in 1947, it has responded to more than 30,000 horticultural inquiries. The experts have journeyed to various gardening clubs and venues, even going to the top of Mount Snowdon, to Buckingham Palace, and to the House of Lords. Dame Hilary Balding, president of Trinity College, said, "I'm thrilled that Trinity is playing host to this flagship BBC programme as part of our gardens season of public events. We know how many keen gardeners in Oxford and the surrounding area will be excited about a chance to submit questions to the panel. And we look forward to welcoming everyone into the college for a fantastic and informative evening, surrounded by our own stunning historic gardens. Free tickets for the event can be booked via the Trinity College website or from Tickets Oxford."
Firefighters were called into action to rescue two stranded cockapoo dogs who had gone missing. At 9:06 a.m. on the 13th of February, a crew from Slade Park Fire Station and a 4x4 vehicle responded to reports of dogs trapped in a slurry pit in Grenoble Road in Littlemore. The fire service's rescue tender was deployed by the officers who responded, and both dogs were successfully reunited with their owner. It's understood the dogs went missing from Littlemore on the 12th of February. A friend of the owner, who asked not to be named, described it as a community effort in supporting animal welfare. She added, "Their owner looked night and day for her two dogs to no avail. At around 9 a.m. this morning, a Thames Water worker at Oxford Sewage Treatment Works heard dogs barking, and upon searching for the location of the barks, two small mud-covered dogs were found in the middle of the lagoon. They were very scared, dirty and cold. After some time, the workers called 999 and requested the help of the fire and rescue service. She described more than 10 firefighters helping out as an inflatable pathway was used to retrieve the dogs. Flooding in the last week had resulted in treacherous conditions in Oxford and around the county. On the Tuesday morning, Oxford City Council closed Grand Pont towpath due to the river level rising over the walkways.
A 19-year-old man was arrested by police following a protest at an Oxford bank. Thames Valley Police confirmed that they were called to a protest in Barclays in Cornmarket Street, Oxford. The Oxford Mail received reports of masked protesters entering the bank. After being asked to leave Barclays by officers, the protesters made their way down to Starbucks and entered that premises. Police said a 19-year-old man from Oxford has been arrested on suspicion of aggravated trespass and is currently in police custody.
Oxford's Covered Market, one of the oldest continually operating markets in the UK, is celebrating its 250th anniversary this year. To mark the occasion, Oxford City Council is collaborating with local design firm Big Top Design to create a special edition branding and a series of events throughout 2024, which will take place in the market and elsewhere. Among the planned celebrations are an anniversary edition of the Easter egg hunt, a May morning event in collaboration with the Market Tap by Tap Social, a birthday event as part of this year's Oxford Open Doors, and a ceremonial cake cutting on November the 1st, the market's official opening date in 1774. More events are yet to be announced, and residents are encouraged to keep an eye on the Covered Market's website for updates. The market was conceived in 1771 when the Oxford Improvement Act proposed the creation of a covered space that would bring street traders together and improve public health. It officially opened in 1774, albeit in a smaller form with timber stalls. Over the following years, it expanded and evolved, starting as primarily a meat market before introducing fruit, vegetables, fish, cheese, cafes, eateries and non-food outlets. Despite a post-war proposal to move it, the market remained steadfast and became listed as a Grade II building in March 2000. In 2021, the City Council adopted a new leasing strategy that focused on diversifying the mix of businesses and spaces, attracting high-quality, specialist, locally owned or independent retailers. Today, the market offers its widest ever selection of specialist artisan produce, cafes, bars, gifts, experiences, fashion and lifestyle products. In addition to the anniversary celebrations, the council approved almost £7 million of investment to revitalise the market in 2023, launched a trial of later opening hours and announced plans for a pedestrian-friendly makeover of Market Street. Consultations are ongoing and those who wish to get involved can access the Oxfordshire County Council's website for details. Since April last year, footfall in the covered market has consistently surpassed 2022 and pre-pandemic levels. Susan Brown, leader of Oxford City Council and Cabinet Member for Inclusive Economy and Partnerships, said, "It's amazing to think of the 250 years of history of our lovely covered market in Oxford. As we all celebrate this year, I, like many other residents of Oxford, have childhood and more recent memories of the market. I'm proud of the work we're doing to ensure it stays at the heart of our city for generations to come and look forward to the celebration planned for this year."
Oxford United has pledged to halve its carbon emissions by 2030 and to reach net zero by 2040. The targets come as the football club has signed the UN Sports for Climate Action Framework. Oxford United CEO Tim Williams said, "Climate change is one of the biggest challenges we face, and football has an important role to play in tackling it." The commitment includes plans for a state-of-the-art, low-carbon 16,000-capacity stadium in Kidlington. The club has become the 13th English club and the only Sky Bet League One club to sign the pledge.
The Duke of Edinburgh is set to visit Oxford's Story Museum. Prince Edward will watch a school's session in Small Worlds and witness traditional storytelling in the Whispering Wood. A story guide will greet him before he tours the museum's gallery spaces on February the 20th. The Duke will also visit Brilli Ant, an exhibition by artist Lottie Smith, using recycled cardboard to address climate action from an ant's perspective. The Duke will explore some of the 8 story worlds within the Enchanted Library, including a newly reimagined Alice in Wonderland exhibit. The display draws inspiration from the opening chapters of Lewis Carroll's classic book. He will meet young story curators aged 12 to 16 and view their contributions, such as new costume designs, to the Alice display.
Jason Momoa, the Hollywood star of Game of Thrones and Aquaman, has had his 1929 Rolls-Royce Phantom II converted to electric power by an Oxfordshire firm. The conversion was carried out by Kidlington's Electrogenic, and the car features in Momoa's new documentary series, On the Rome. The conversion is portrayed, showing the work of engineers who enabled the vintage motor to operate with its clean, state-of-the-art technology. Mr. Momoa said, "In order to pull off this dream project, I had to find the right partner. I needed a team that would appreciate the stored history of this car while updating its technology. Electrogenic is all about honouring vintage cars, making them electric without losing any of the vehicle's character." The car, a symbol of British automotive history, initially had a 7.7-litre engine, producing up to 50 BHP and speeds well over 80 miles an hour, according to Rolls-Royce. Now, the original powertrain has been replaced with a 93-kilowatt-hour battery feeding an electric motor fitted between the chassis rails. The end product is a machine with a transmission outputting 150 kilowatts and 310 newton metres of torque, delivering 1,000 newton metres to the prop shaft. Steve Drummond, director of Electrogenic, said, "It has been a labour of love for everyone at Electrogenic and a lot of fun, working with Jason over the course of 18 months to bring his vision to life. This is undoubtedly the most complex classic car EV conversion ever undertaken, so the stunning results really are a testament to the world-leading talents of our team. Also, the interior design has been updated to maintain the car's original aesthetics, with the classic controls repurposed." Mr. Drummond said, "While transformed in terms of performance and ease of use, as with all our conversions, the car's tuning and calibration, honed over countless test miles, have been finely honed to reflect the original character. There are now different driving modes such as normal drive, range boosting eco, and high performance sport settings." Mr. Drummond added, "We are honoured to have been asked to build this special car for Jason Momoa, who really loves his cars and is deeply passionate about the environment. It's been an immensely rewarding collaborative process with him, bringing our shared vision to life to the highest possible standards. This really has been a fascinating project to work on. We're delighted with the results. It combines the most stunning 1920s coach building with an updated driving experience that's entirely befitting of a Rolls-Royce."
A new optician's shop is set to open in Oxfordshire this month. Specsavers will move into a new premise at the former M&Co store in the High Street in Wantage. Its current store in Grove Street was due to close on the February the 18th, with the new one opening on Saturday, February the 24th. The relocation has been attributed to increased demand, with the new premises more than double the size of the current one. This will enable the retail chain to expand its optical and audiology offering. The expanded store will have 7 testing rooms, including an audiology room and a contact lens space. New equipment has also been installed throughout, including an optical coherence tomography machine. This technology allows the optometrist to take a 3D image of the back of your eye to help spot serious eye conditions, including glaucoma, up to 4 years earlier. Store director at Specsavers Wantage, Nikki Rutter, said, "We're really looking forward to opening our doors to the new store and can't wait to welcome in customers old and new. After several years in our current location, we really had outgrown it, so moving to our new site with so much more space is just what we need." The investment has also meant local recruitment, with additional colleagues taken on board.
Blenheim Palace has introduced a digital returnable cup system at all of its catering outlets. The scheme invites visitors to enjoy hot beverages in returnable cups that require a £2 deposit, which aims to eliminate single-use cups entirely from the whole estate. David Green, head of innovation at Blenheim Palace, said, "We serve 400,000 hot drinks every single year and have the ambition of being carbon neutral by 2027. So the introduction of our returnable cup scheme is a major step towards that goal. The main benefit of the scheme is that we expect to eradicate 30 tonnes of carbon every single year as a result. An initial pilot without a deposit led to cups going missing, reducing the effectiveness of the scheme. On adding a deposit scheme, visitors have shown greater responsibility over their waste. The cups are cleaned on site after being returned at multiple designated points, refunded into the visitor's digital wallet. All the cups can be traced using a radio frequency identification technology. The scheme has been delivered in collaboration with Circular & Co. and ReUniverse. Adrian Frithui, commercial lead at Circular & Co., said, "The launch of the returnable cup scheme at Blenheim Palace is a major step forward for the adoption of circular economy principles in the UK."
3 Oxford Brookes University students have been appointed as student ambassadors by a rural preservation charity. The students, Alana Haywood, Rahim Adipoju and Matthew Clayton, will support volunteers at the Campaign to Protect Rural England, CPRE, in responding to development applications. They are all from the university's School of the Built Environment and will each serve on one of 4 CPRE district committees across Oxfordshire. Their duties will include producing CPRE responses to planning applications and liaising with chairpersons. Dave Valler, Professor of Spatial Planning at Oxford Brookes, said, "We are grateful to CPRE Oxfordshire for providing such an excellent opportunity to our students. This real-world experience will be invaluable in developing their skills and knowledge and will support their future careers in planning. The students will also connect with parish councils, community groups and other stakeholders through site visits. They will gain practical experience engaging with planning systems at a grassroots level and also supplement the work of the Countryside Charity." Helen Marshall, Director of CPRE Oxfordshire, added, "It's fantastic to have these young experts on board to help our volunteers."
A water main burst dramatically in the Greater Lees area of Oxford. Householders in Nettlebed Mead reported a jet of water shooting into the air after the pipe burst. Thames Water were alerted and finally brought the leak under control at about 12:30. Householder Fiona Greenwood was shocked by the force of the water. She said, "There's been a slow leak for a couple of days and they came to sort it out this morning. However, it seems not to have gone to plan. It started erupting about 10 in the morning and they've just managed to get it under control at about 12:30. The Water Board officers were sitting in the vans during this time and they were questioned. So they said they were waiting for the supply to be turned off. A Thames Water spokesman said, "We received reports of a burst water main at Nettlebed Mead in Greater Lees earlier today. Our engineers attended within the hour and made the repair. The area has now been cleared and we are sorry to any residents for the inconvenience. We have 200 repair teams working tirelessly to fix leaks, with activity taking place 7 days a week. And over 280 people are working round the clock and mainly overnight to detect leaks not yet appearing at ground level."
Developers wanting to build Europe's largest solar farm are facing pressure from MPs to bump up their pay offer to Oxfordshire householders. The company behind the Botley West solar farm has promised to give nearby communities £50,000 each year if controversial plans for the 2,500-acre development near the Blenheim estate are approved. The solar farm would cover sites near Botley, Kidlington and Woodstock if given the green light. But Conservative MPs in Oxfordshire said the company's offer was woefully inadequate and should be closer to £3 million. Whitney MP Robert Courts, Henley MP John Howell and Banbury MP Victoria Prentice said in a joint statement, "Funding must go further and be delivered more widely." Developers Photovolt Development Partners, PVDP, said the MP's request would be fully considered. The push from MPs for better pay comes as PVDP prepares to finally submit its proposal to the Planning Inspectorate following the end of a public consultation. If given the green light, the proposed solar farm would span sites near Botley, Kidlington and Woodstock and deliver 840 megawatts of clean power into the national grid. The development is so large it will be assessed as a nationally significant infrastructure project and the final decision will be made by the government. If approved, building work could start in 2025, but fears have been raised over the solar farm's environmental impact. More than 75% of the site is planned for land in Oxford's Green Belt. There are also concerns about the loss of agricultural land. Mr. Howell, Mr. Courts and Ms. Prentice have written to Mark Owen Lloyd, Director of PVDP, calling for more money for local communities. In a joint letter sent last week, they said it would compensate for the detrimental impact of the solar farm. The letter was also penned by Conservative parliamentary candidate for Bicester and Woodstock, Rupert Harrison. It said, "It is felt strongly that the community benefit funding of £50,000 per annum currently proposed, should your scheme ultimately be approved, is woefully inadequate for a development of this scale. This will scarcely ameliorate the detrimental impact of these proposals for local communities. We believe any funding must go further and be delivered more widely to ensure the benefit is proportionate to the negative impact residents are expected to endure." Community groups argue that a starting point for discussion should instead be £3 million. The MPs and Mr. Harrison said the current pay offer was one of the reasons we cannot support your proposals in their current form. They also pointed to the impact on Oxfordshire's most iconic rolling countryside and the loss of vast swathes of productive agricultural land. "Given the strength of feeling this development has generated locally, we could only support a radically different approach," they said. Their letter came a few days after campaign groups also wrote to the directors of PVDP calling for improved funds. One of the groups, Oxford Friends of the Earth, said community funding must be fair and realistic. Member Chris Church said, "Projects of this size are a new challenge for us all, and a decision will need to be made with great care. But if it happens, then the community benefit must be fair and realistic." The current offer is for £50,000 a year. This is totally inadequate. If this project were to go ahead, it would be generating electricity and income for the next 40 years. We are simply calling for a fair chunk of the profits to go back to the local communities. This could be a transformative sum of money that could deliver real lasting benefits. If agreed, Botley West should be a great example of what can be done. We are asking the developers to reconsider the current offer, and make a more realistic offer. PVDP admitted that a large number of people had asked for more community funding in the consultation. A spokesman said, "We're really grateful for the feedback that we have received in this area, and it is something that will be fully considered as the project moves forward." He added, "It's important that our community benefits initiatives are viewed as a whole. As well as a fund, we are proposing to establish a retail electricity company to sell the output from Botley West Solar Farm to local residents at discounted rates. And we have also explored on-site benefits such as new footpaths and cycle paths, as well as areas for community food growing."
Oxford City park users are being asked for their views on changes to bylaws, which could allow the playing of ball games, climbing and wild swimming, which are currently banned. Lovers of the great outdoors in Oxford have been invited to give their views on proposals for the city's 130 open spaces and parks. The suggested modifications include revoking older bylaws, which are now deemed as outdated or unsuitable. The council says these restrictions are in conflict for the pressing need to encourage more active lifestyles. The City Council is also keen to amend bylaws to better reflect the modern usage of Oxford's parks. So the City Council wants the public's opinion on abolishing the blanket bicycle riding ban to allow considerate cycling in parks in light of the cycling lanes present in Cowley Marsh Recreation Ground and Donington playing fields. The City Council holds several bylaws for parks, conservation areas and play facilities, which dictate the basic use of these public areas. These regulations work towards the safeguarding of habitats, wildlife and the broader environment. For more than 25 years, the City Council has not altered its bylaws for parks and open spaces. New bylaws will be introduced to take care of newer challenges that have cropped up over the past 2.5 decades concerning changing priorities, such as sky lanterns and drones and the usage of e-scooters. These proposed alterations would be the same for the parks and open spaces as are currently covered, ensuring consistency and clarity across the city. It will include new play spaces that have been built since the bylaws were last modified. Locations where poorly positioned play areas have been replaced, such as the one at the Slade and Girdlestone Road's corner, are also added. While the council can enforce these bylaws through council officers or the police, they say their main aim is to deal with any violations informally by talking to people. The public consultation process will be held from now until April the 8th. To ensure a comprehensive and inclusive consultation process, the council plans to directly engage with key community stakeholders to receive their feedback regarding the proposals. Councillor Chue Munkonge, Cabinet Member for Leisure and Parks, said, "At Oxford City Council, we want everyone to be able to enjoy Oxford's parks and open spaces. To ensure that people can do this safely, we sometimes have to proactively tackle antisocial and nuisance behaviours that negatively impact users of our 130 green spaces. The proposed changes are a long overdue positive step towards creating a more accessible, pragmatic and sensible framework for users to ensure a cleaner, safer environment within our city's green spaces. Oxford residents can voice their opinions by visiting the Council's consultation portal.
A disused boarding school, once known as the Jewish Eton, appears in a new environmental disaster movie. Carmel College in Mungwell Park, near Wallingford, was Europe's only Jewish boarding school before closing in 1997. The abandoned building doubles as a refugee camp in the survival film The End We Start From, which is in cinemas at the moment. Killing Eve star Jodie Comer plays a new mother who stays at the camp after her London home floods. The film also features Hollywood heavyweight Benedict Cumberbatch and star of ancient Rome-set comedy TV series Plebs, Joel Fry. Film crews were spotted at the former college and a field in Cromarsh Gifford back in September 2022. Other films shot in the building include The Death of Stalin, The Iron Lady, Annihilation and The Little Drummer Girl.
Traders at a long-standing city centre market have considered whether the space is now dominated by street food amid claims that it is in decline. Gloucester Green Market in Oxford operates from Wednesday to Sunday, where traders sell varied items from hot food to T-shirts and hardware. A member of the Friends of Gloucester Green group, Isabel Tucker, said at a full council meeting in January that the market is dominated by street food and is neglected in parts. Adrian King of the Again Garments store said, "It is a community market and we love having the food. People are here to enjoy themselves and that is what they do." Ping Yu has been trading at the market since last year and works there 4 days a week. She said, "Without food, I don't think as many people would come. I prefer having the food here and it's good for the whole market." David Townsend has lived in Oxford since 1962 and has been an on-off antiques trader at the market for 3 years. He said, "There is no oomph here. It used to be vibrant and I think the council has not encouraged that anymore. The parking fees are horrendous." The Chilterns flats overlook the market and Sally Thomas has been living there since the year 2000. She said, "Of course, there are people who on a windy day do not like when there is a bit of smell from the food. That is living in a city centre square." The longest standing stall holder at Gloucester Green is believed to be Peter Forbes, who sells hardware which is all recyclable. Mr. Peter Forbes has been at his stall for 34 years. He said, "The food stalls are beneficial, but there shouldn't be too many, of course. The aisle should not be for food." Zaid Tilvek said he used to own 3 shops in the square for 34 years before these were taken down, after which trading on the square became his only option. He said, "I think there are too many food stalls in the market. A lot of them are the same thing." An Oxford City Council spokesman said, "Gloucester Green Market has grown from operating 2 days a week to operating over 4 days a week. There has been a shift from the older, more traditional market stall uses, as more demand for new uses such as street food, coupled with entertainment and experiential uses, has happened." Market operators LSD Promotions added, "While street food has become a prominent feature, it's important to note that it's just one aspect of our vibrant market."
Radio presenter Ken Bruce has led tributes from Oxfordshire listeners to BBC Radio 2 broadcaster Steve Wright after his death aged 69. On 13th of February, a statement shared to the broadcaster by Mr. Wright's family announced the death of the beloved presenter, aged 69. Following the news, Mr. Bruce from Tame paid tribute to the outstanding broadcaster, revealing he had been planning to have lunch with him to celebrate his MBE. His friend and long-time BBC radio colleague, Mr. Bruce, said, "Totally shocked to hear the news about the great Steve Wright. We were planning lunch to celebrate the award of his richly deserved MBE. An outstanding and innovative broadcaster whose listeners loved him. What a loss to the world of radio." Tributes were also paid by fans of Mr. Wright from across Oxfordshire. Mr. Wright last appeared on air on the 11th of February, hosting a pre-recorded special Valentine's Day edition of his Love Songs programme on Radio 2. The broadcaster joined BBC Radio in 1980 to host a Saturday evening show before moving on to host Steve Wright in the Afternoon a year later until 1993. He then fronted the Radio 1 breakfast show for a year until 1995 and completed a stint at commercial radio stations before returning to BBC Radio 2 in 1996 to host Steve Wright's Saturday show and Sunday Love Songs. In 1999, he recreated Steve Wright in the Afternoon every weekday on Radio 2 with celebrity interviews and entertaining trivia featured in his Factoids segment before stepping down in September 2022. Mr. Wright continued to present Sunday Love Songs on BBC Radio 2, and since October last year, he presented the long-running show Pick of the Pops, which had previously been fronted by acclaimed radio DJ Paul Gambaccini. He was made MBE in the New Year Honours for services to radio. And then in an article later in the week, we have this bit. BBC radio presenter Steve Wright's death is being treated as unexpected but not suspicious, police have said. The veteran broadcaster died this week at the age of 69, the corporation announced on the Tuesday. Police and paramedics had been called to a flat in the Marylebone area of central London on Monday morning. A Metropolitan Police spokesperson told the PA news agency, "A man in his 60s was pronounced dead at the scene. His next of kin have been informed. The death was unexpected, but is not being treated as suspicious. A report will be prepared for the coroner." A London Ambulance Service spokesperson said paramedics were called to the address following reports of an incident. The spokesperson added, "We sent a number of resources to the scene. Very sadly, a person was pronounced dead at the scene." Wright's colleagues hailed the veteran broadcaster as one of the greatest exponents of the art of radio following the news of his death.
Plans have been submitted for an Oxfordshire secondary school to be knocked down and completely rebuilt as part of a government scheme. Gosford Hill in Kidlington is one of around 400 schools across the country that will be redeveloped after being allocated funding from the Department for Education's Social Rebuilding Programme, SRB. Details of the project were published last October by the school, but now an official planning application has been submitted to Charwell District Council. Under the plans, all existing buildings on the site of the school, established only in 1932, would be demolished and a new three-storey block would be constructed to house all of the teaching and indoor sports facilities. The block would be centrally located and would take the form of an L shape. The new school is designed to accommodate 750 students aged 11 to 18 with 150 sixth form spaces. The proposals include a courtyard space between the wings of the school, incorporating breakout spaces from the dining hall, a music classroom, and Library Resource Centre. an area of the site released by the demolition of existing buildings is proposed to incorporate a nice side football pitch. Changing facilities, sports storage spaces and an activity studio are also proposed in the plans. The school also has a shared use agreement with the Kidlington and Gosford Leisure Centre for sports hall use. Before the demolition of the existing buildings, temporary classrooms and parking areas would be built. These temporary facilities would be two stories in height and would be fully functional to ensure no loss of teaching resources, said the application. These facilities would be used for approximately 14 months while the new building is built and becomes operational. Two car parks are also proposed, one totalling 31 spaces intended for additional and visitor spaces, and a northern car park of 67 spaces for staff. Under the school rebuilding programme, schools and sixth form colleges across England are allowed funding for major rebuilding and refurbishment projects. Two other schools in Oxfordshire have been allocated funding under the programme, Didcot Girls' School and Oxford Spires Academy. This project was previously described as a transformative moment for Kidlington by Gosford Hill head teacher Nigel Sellers. Mr. Sellers said, "This is a huge moment for the school and the fantastic community we are privileged to serve."
We may be almost in spring, but staff at a shop in Oxford's Covered Market are celebrating after a late Christmas treat. Crystal Spirit Emporium has this week received the accolade of Best Dressed Christmas Window Display following its Yuletide efforts. The shop, run by Sarah Jane Nichols, offers a range of crystals, aromatherapy oils and other products. The award was handed out by Councillor Lubna Arshad, Lord Mayor of Oxford. Oxford City Council opened voting for the competition before Christmas, asking residents to use the like or love reaction for their favourite display on Facebook.
A warning has been issued over near misses involving pedestrians and delivery vehicles at the University Parks in Oxford. Plans have been submitted to Oxford City Council to create a new path behind South Lodge to boost safety for people enjoying a walk. Oxford University wants to create the new pedestrian path off South Parks Road to avoid a clash between people on foot and delivery vehicles. A statement compiled by the university's park superintendent, Dr. Carolyn Jenkins, tells planners, "This is a proposal to reduce the risk to pedestrians from vehicle use resulting from a series of near misses. It is specifically intended to mitigate rather than eliminate risk, but is a key feature of a series of low-impact initiatives designed to make the university parks safer for users. The main vehicle route into the university parks for deliveries, events traffic and maintenance vehicles for the university parks and sports department is off South Parks Road, from the South Lodge Gate northwards. This is also the busiest pedestrian route through the parks." Dr. Jenkins added, "The potential conflicts on this shared pedestrian vehicle route are exacerbated by the use of headphones or mobile phones by pedestrians and joggers. Dogs off leads are an additional problem. Both parks and security staff have had concerns for a while that there is a health and safety risk that requires mitigation. There is no possible alternative access for vehicles into the university parks. So the university is proposing the alternative pedestrian route in an area nearby alongside the fence between the university parks and the university science area." Dr. Jenkins added, "While there are currently no plans to ban pedestrians from using the shared roadway, it is expected that the new path, which is a more direct route and which will be landscaped, will be more attractive to dog walkers, students, joggers and people with small children, mitigating the hazard. City Councillor Anna Railton welcomed the proposal. She said, "This sounds positive, and anything that reduces conflict between pedestrians and vehicles is to be welcomed. It is quite a tricky corner at the moment." Last year, Oxford University temporarily dropped its ban on bikes in the university parks. The suspension of the ban was in place while work was carried out to repair the Marston Cycle Path bridges across the River Charwell. The bridges were built over 30 years ago and were in urgent need of repair. Cyclists and other residents have long campaigned to be allowed to ride through university parks, but the university has not normally allowed it.
Almost two dozen schools in Oxfordshire ran at a deficit in the last academic year, new figures reveal. It comes as the number of schools losing money across England soared last year. The Association of School and College Leaders said government investment has failed to keep pace with rising costs, warning deficits will harm pupils' education. Schools are required to disclose details of their finances to the Department for Education, although not all of them do so, meaning only an incomplete picture is available. The figures show 20 of the 137, that's 14.6%, local authority-maintained schools in Oxfordshire, which did provide information, were in a financial deficit in 2022-23, up from 17 the year before. A school is in a financial deficit when it spends more than it earned when factoring in the previous year's balance. This may not be representative of the entire Oxfordshire area, given just 45% of local authority-run schools and nurseries provided relevant information. Nationally, there was a significant rise in the number of schools running a negative budget. Some 13.1% of local authority-run schools in England had a deficit in 2022-23, an almost 50% rise on the year before. Julie Harnden, funding specialist at the ASCL, said many schools must operate in-year deficits while identifying longer-term savings because of stalling investment in education. While schools endeavour to do this without detriment to pupils, this inevitably impacts on provision, such as pastoral support, curriculum options, and routine building maintenance, she added. Ms. Harnden continued, "Despite the Prime Minister's promise that his main funding priority in every spending review will be education, schools and colleges received barely a mention in the autumn statement. This must be rectified in the spring budget to turn rhetoric into reality." Paul Whiteman, General Secretary of the School Leaders Union, the National Association of Head Teachers, said schools slipping into a deficit will have cut everything they possibly can first to maintain a positive budget. Mr. Whiteman added, "The number of schools being forced into deficit shows that government funding of education is nowhere near where it should be for the level of demand that actually exists." Financial difficulties were especially problematic for nurseries, with almost a third in a deficit across England in 2022-23. A Department for Education spokesman said, "School funding is rising to more than £59.6 billion next year, the highest ever level in real terms per pupil. While the vast majority of schools are operating with a surplus, we are providing up to £40 million in 2023-24 to support schools which find themselves in financial difficulties."
Oxford has seen a decrease in life expectancy for girls, new figures show. On average, life expectancy for those people born between 2020 and 2022 was lower than in 2017 to 2019 in England, Northern Ireland and Wales. Experts said the decrease has been predominantly driven by the coronavirus pandemic, which led to increased mortality in 2020 and 2021. The Office for National Statistics figures show that life expectancy for girls born between 2020 and 2022 stood at 83.9 years, a decrease from 84.7 years in 2017 to 2019, before the pandemic. However, life expectancy for boys born in the same period stayed roughly the same at 80.3 years. Overall, life expectancy at birth in the UK was 78.6 years for males and 82.6 years for females, a fall from 79.3 and 83 years respectively. The average lifespan of a person is determined by changes in mortality rates across their lifetime, meaning that if rates improve, life expectancy will go back up, the ONS said. Julie Stanborough, ONS Deputy Director of Health and Life Events, added that there is a clear geographical divide when it comes to areas with the best and worst outcomes. She said, none of the 10 local areas with the highest life expectancy were located in the north of England, Wales or Northern Ireland. By contrast, of the 10 local areas with the lowest life expectancy, none were in the south of England. There was a gap of more than a decade between the local areas with the highest and lowest male life expectancy, and more than 7 years between the top and bottom areas for female life expectancy. Male life expectancy was the highest in Hart in Hampshire at 83.7 years, while Kensington and Chelsea had the highest female life expectancy at 86.3 years. Vina Raleigh, senior fellow at the King's Fund charity, which works to improve health and care in England, said inequality has widened due to the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on people living in deprived areas. She added, the differences in life expectancy are driven by socioeconomic inequalities, including levels of income, education, housing and employment, with people in more deprived areas having significantly shorter lives on average than people in less deprived areas. In 2020 to 2022, the English regions with the highest and lowest male life expectancy respectively were the South East and the North East. Meanwhile, the areas with the highest and lowest female life expectancy were the South West and the North East. In the South East, the average was 83.8 years.
One of Europe's leading science and technology centres has celebrated its 23rd anniversary. Culham Innovation Centre in Oxfordshire marked its milestone with a champagne reception for past and present customers, many of which are leading figures in fusion energy and high-tech engineering. Based at the UK Atomic Energy Authority's Culham campus near Abingdon, the centre has incubated over 150 early-stage businesses since 2001, nourishing the growth of the fusion supply chain and the progress of world-altering technologies. Featuring flexible office and laboratory specifications with built-in business support services, the centre has aided businesses that now collectively employ over 600 individuals. Joe Stevens, Managing Director of Oxford Innovation Space, which manages the centre, said, "We are proud to have supported so many companies to start, scale and graduate from the Culham Innovation Centre over the last 23 years. Some of our most noticeable graduates, such as Tokamak Energy and Reaction Engines, are developing cutting-edge technology and creating substantial job opportunities. Our Culham Centre demonstrates the integral role innovation centres can play in building communities of SMEs, driving local economic growth and supporting the government's ambition for the UK to be a science and technology superpower. David Kingham, Executive Vice Chairman and co-founder of Tokamak Energy, said Cullum Innovation Centre was the ideal location for the early growth of Tokamak Energy when the company emerged as a spin-out from UK AEA. It was the perfect place to start a bold, hard tech company. The most recent addition to the community at Cullum is Oxford Sigma. Launched in 2019 by university classmates Jonathan Musgrove and Dr. Thomas Davis, the advanced materials technology company initially offered consultancy services but has now branched into technical development. Mr. Musgrove said, "Cullum is the key place for fusion in the UK, so Cullum Innovation Centre was the right place for us to be." Fusion, which offers potential for delivering secure, sustainable, low-carbon energy in the future, operates on the same processes that power the sun and stars. Across the campus, fusion energy technology operates at roughly 6 times the core temperature of the sun, marking it as the hottest address on the planet. Tim Bestwick, Deputy CEO of UK AEA, said the Cullum campus is developing rapidly as a global hub for the commercialisation of fusion technologies, and the Cullum Innovation Centre plays a central role in this mission. Active Needle, a medical device company on campus since 2016, is another success story, using its needle technology to enable more visible, precise biopsies and less painful drug delivery for patients.
An engineering company has been recognised for its contribution to apprenticeships. FMB Oxford, based on the Osney Mead Industrial Estate, has been recognised as in the Solving Skills 1 Year On Partnerships Powering Apprenticeships report by the Institute of Physics, IOP. FMB Oxford, with 60 employees, has found leveraging apprenticeships beneficial. Having overcome challenges often faced by similarly sized organisations when engaging with the apprenticeship system. Bev O'Farrell of FMB Oxford said, "The real benefit of having an apprentice is watching them come in and grow in confidence, in knowledge and experience." The company collaborates with Engineering Trust Training Limited to ensure that their apprentices receive highly specialised training, rotations around the business, and international exposure. As a result, several apprentices have been retained as permanent employees. FMB Oxford manufactures instruments for photon delivery systems or particle accelerators and was nominated for the Apprenticeship Employer of the Year at the Oxfordshire Local Enterprise Partnership Awards in 2023. IOP's report shines a spotlight on organisations across the UK and Ireland that are promoting apprenticeships, addressing the need for physics-demanding jobs, 52% of which do not require a degree.
Students at Oxford Brookes University have been ranked as the second most addicted to vapes in the UK. A survey revealed that 68% said they were addicted, and 40% of these did not smoke before they started vaping. This rate puts them second only to Northumbria University, where 74% of students vape. The TAB student news site surveyed more than 6,000 undergraduates to gather these figures. The report claims the figures are even more shocking than last year, as it offers an exclusive look into the changing vaping habits of students. Last year's survey results found 27% of students addicted to disposable vapes. This year, the figure has risen sharply to 57%. The research revealed that the most popular choice of vape is now Lost Mary's, preferred by 34% of students. Last year's number one, Elf Bars, were only the choice of 21% of students this year. 52% of all students who admitted to vaping surveyed said they did not smoke before they started vaping. Health complications have also been reported by 16% of students since they began vaping. The most common issues include gum disease, mouth ulcers, constant shortness of breath, coughing, and issues with teeth. Dr. Babak Ashraf said, similar to regular cigarettes, vapes release nicotine, a substance that releases neurotransmitters like dopamine, which generate feelings of pleasure and reward in the brain. Certain electronic vapes can deliver nicotine to the bloodstream more rapidly than cigarettes, making them more addictive. He advises addicted students to seek help, explaining that withdrawal symptoms can be caused by quitting. Dr. Ashrafi encouraged students to reach out to their GP or addiction specialist, affirming they can offer personalised plans and medication to help you quit. Recognising the root cause of the need to vape is vital, alongside the support of mental health counsellors and support groups. The TAB investigation also examined vaping habits at other UK universities. The University of Sussex had the least vape-addicted student body, with only 35% claiming to be dependent. The other universities to make the top five were Cardiff, with 67% addicted, and King's College London and Newcastle, both with 64% addicted. The majority of those students go through a vape in one day or night out. The findings from the TAB indicate an upward trend in vaping among the UK's university students, carrying with it growing concerns over health complications related to this habit.
A rare short-eared owl sighting has been captured on the Blenheim Estate in one of the 9 newly planted woodlands. The owls, often seen hunting during the day, are of a European conservation concern and are classed as an amber list species. Photos were taken by Tom Goff, Assistant Forestry Contracts Manager at Nicholson's, who collaborated with the Morgan Sindall Group PLC and the Forestry Commission to plant 270,000 trees. This has created publicly accessible woodlands along the Dorne and Glyme river valleys. The activity forms part of a wider commitment by Blenheim Estate to boost its natural capital. Residents of Blenheim Estate Homes Parkview development in Woodstock live alongside this woodland and the UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Award-winning author Ali Smith will receive the Bodleian Library's highest honour for her work in literature. The Bodley Medal will be presented to the writer during the 2024 Oxford Literary Festival, specifically at the Bodley Lecture and Award of the Bodley Medal Life and Work event. The Bodley Medal, which will be presented on March the 21st at the Sheldonian Theatre, acknowledges significant contributions individuals have made in the areas of literature, libraries, media, communications, science and philanthropy. The tradition, a legacy of the 17th century, resumed in 2002 and has been bestowed on people including Peter Carey, Dame Hilary Mantel, Professor Dame Mary Beard, Sir Kazuo Ishiguro, Zadie Smith and Colm Tóibín. Ms Smith, hailed as Scotland's Nobel Laureate in Waiting, is an award-winning author with numerous recognitions to her name. Her accolades include the Goldsmiths Prize, Orwell Prize, Costa Best Novel Award and the Women's Prize, and she has also been a Booker Prize nominee 4 times. Her writing portfolio includes novels, short story collections like The Accidental, Hotel World, How to Be Both, and The Seasonal Quartet. Her most recent novel, Companion Piece, switches between post-Brexit lockdown Britain and the Middle Ages, offering a look into differing times and possibilities. Miss Smith said, I couldn't be more amazed and delighted at the gracious Bodley Medal coming my way, particularly because it comes from one of the world's greatest libraries. I'll keep it on my desk as a talisman. Libraries are the ultimate source of sources of thought, of knowledge, of history, of art, of language's own history and process and power, of the relationship between imagination, truth and fiction. Themselves, they're the prime and communal source of every book. Accompanying the awards ceremony will be a talk featuring Ms. Smith and Richard Ovenden, Bodley's librarian. They will discuss Ms. Smith's life, inspirations and body of works. Mr. Ovenden said, Ali Smith is an extraordinary writer. Her work considers the timely and timeless complexities of our world with a great sensitivity. With a fierce conviction that reading does not just change lives, but help us to live better lives, Ali Smith is a highly appropriate recipient of the Bodley Medal. The Oxford Literary Festival 2024, organised by the Bodleian Libraries, will host a varied programme of events highlighting the collections and exhibitions of the libraries. The libraries will offer literary walking tours of the city, showcase Shakespeare's first folio, and host talks from curators of Write, Cut, Rewrite and Chaucer Here and Now. Further details can be found on their website, and advance booking is required for all events, with tickets now available on the festival's website.
New owners of a pub in the heart of East Oxford are hoping to reopen the hostelry next month. The Oxford Blue in Marston Street has been taken on by a group of 9 people operating under the name Green Box, who have already begun renovation work on the property. They say they hope to return the pub to its former glory with pub partner Brewpoint. According to a promotional video on Kickstarter, renovation work has involved stripping back the walls and clearing up the dirt. The new management team is working to offer culinary experiences, sweet merch and private hires, and aim to build a community hub with community events, brunches and Sunday roasts. They also intend to host live music, pub yoga, book clubs, quizzes, and to serve the sporting history of the venue. The pub's Kickstarter page has a £5,000 listed fundraising target, open to anyone who wishes to make donations towards the venue's revival. A sign currently displayed on the entrance door reads, "We're revamping this wonderful pub and intend to launch a new hub for the community in March." The Oxford Blue has been vacant since June.
8 Oxford University Hospital healthcare professionals have taken their first steps on a clinical academic pathway following 6-month internships. Sponsored by National Institute for Health and Care Research, NIHR, the initiative encourages nurses, midwives, allied health professionals, pharmacists and healthcare scientists with little or no research experience to further their skills. Covering salary costs, the internship focuses on dedicated time for research, with the interns spending 15 hours a week over 6 months on their projects. The program integrates classroom learning with practical sessions where the interns are schooled on core research skills and guided weekly by an experienced mentor. Each intern embarked on a project of their own choice, thus linking their clinical practice to research work. Among the 8 interns were 2 nurses, 5 physiotherapists and a pharmacist who combined their clinical skills with research talents. Professor Helen Walthall, Oxford Biomedical Research Centre's research capacity lead, said the internship enables practitioners to put their toe in the water to see if they would like to do research as a career and to combine clinical practice with research. It's been great to see that people want research in their careers and they want to move forward on the research pathway while marrying that with their clinical work. Professor Walthall, also Oxford University's Director of Nursing and Midwifery Research Innovation, added, "The next stage offered by the Biomedical Research Centre is the Preparatory Award. There are also NIHR National Awards, and we will be offering support to apply for those." Among the interns was Beverly Greensit, a physiotherapist in the same-day emergency care, whose project explored National Acute Frailty Service guidelines application in same-day emergency care units. She said, "I love doing this internship. The best aspect was having protected time to do some research, and that was very beneficial because I'm the only therapist on AAU, and doing clinical work 5 days a week and trying to put time aside can be quite challenging." Rachel Tan, a specialist pharmacist in critical care, whose study aimed at reducing sedative use in the ICU, called it a valuable experience, saying it equipped her with essential skills such as writing good aims and designing surveys. Lara Carney, a renal supportive care specialist nurse, whose project aimed to address relatives of loved ones' information needs who had opted to stop dialysis, said, "I'm very grateful to the Biomedical Research Centre for giving me the opportunity, time and funding to do this project." The Biomedical Research Centre expects to recruit the next cohort of interns in May 2024.
The Oxford City Council's service provider is highlighting the innovation and inclusivity in its apprenticeship programme for National Apprenticeship Week. The apprenticeship scheme at Oxford Direct Services, ODS, currently employs 14 apprentices aged 18 to 49 and has a commitment to diversity and open eligibility, not based on strict gender requirements, but on alignment with the organisation's core values. It offers equal opportunities and has been proactive in guiding women into the areas of the workforce which have been traditionally dominated by men. The apprentices come mostly from Oxford, and applications are set to open again in the summer. The ODS apprenticeship scheme offers job engagement and allows apprentices to earn a competitive wage while gaining practical experience and pursuing professional qualifications. From electricians and gardeners to accountancy and ICT, the array of career paths it opens is wide-ranging. This approach reinforces ODS's efforts towards Oxford City Council's goal of building an inclusive economy by promoting career growth within the local community. Councillor Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Citizen-Focused Services and Council Companies, said, "ODS apprenticeships offer a great opportunity to earn while you learn. They're a way to get valuable hands-on experience while you study towards an industry-recognised national qualification. Anyone looking to take a first step on the career ladder or maybe take a different direction in their career should seriously consider what an ODS apprenticeship has to offer. You'll be part of an organisation that's doing good for Oxford, as well as making sure that you've gained the skills and knowledge needed to succeed. On an apprenticeship, you're employed to do a paid job while studying for a nationally recognised formal qualification, usually for 1 day a week at a college, a university or at a training centre. By the end of your apprenticeship, you'll have your chosen career." Among the apprentices is Zoe, an installation and maintenance engineer, an apprentice from a hospital background. She said, "I've got a daughter, so juggling around work and life is a bit challenging, but my team leaders and everyone are really supportive and help me out, so they've made it possible." Tyron, a former Royal Logistics Corps in the Army and current gas maintenance apprentice, said, "Everything ODS has put me through, the training I'm getting from the guys on the tools, is second to none." the ODS apprenticeship scheme is set to accept new applications this coming summer. Visit ODS Apprenticeships or email at odsapprenticeships, one word, at odsgroup.co.uk.
That was the last news item for this week. If you have any comments or feedback regarding the OxTalk service, please do not hesitate to contact us. You can either send an email to mail at oxtalk.org.uk, that's mail, M-A-I-L, at oxtalk.org.uk, or telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. That's 07496 062 280. There are several ways to listen to OxTalk. As usual, we send out USB memory sticks in yellow packets to listeners. You can listen to this week's recording along with the entire back catalogue going back to 2007 at oxtalk.org.uk. That's www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to the recordings straight away or download them for later listening. You can also listen on a smart speaker. Thank you for listening.